Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to XYZ, the podcast about CNC, automation, robotics, business, and more. My name is Nick Frank, and I'm one of the owners of Frank Brothers Guitar Company, and I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Goff of Goff Custom Knives. What's happening?
Oh, mate, it's been a busy week.
You seem grumpy today. Are you a grumpy guy today?
I'm not. I'm a little cranky because it just took me like 30 minutes to figure at these technical issues with recording. I have had a bit of a day.
Oh no, what's been going on?
Well, I had to run to Canadian Tire. For anybody not living in Canada, Canadian Tire is like a kind of shitty hardware store that sells lawn furniture and like kitchen supplies and hardware. And I had to get a like big rabbiting router bit.
Oh, okay.
So we're building this guitar that had to, before we laminated the top of the guitar onto the body of the guitar, we had to route a cavity into it for these special pickups that are called Charlie Christians. And they just, the way they get mounted, there's a bobbin, which is like a sort of plate, the base of the pickup. And it's much bigger than the actual pickup itself that sticks out of the guitar.
Oh, weird.
So it has to have a big cavity underneath the top, and then the top is the cutout for the pickup is just the size of the pickup itself, not the size of the bobbin, the plate, the base plate. So when we designed the cavities, I didn't make them big enough, so I had to, you know, go in. I had to plunge this huge router bit into the little opening for the pickup route and undercut the cavity inside of it to make it larger.
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it was dangerous.
On a fully finished guitar?
This one hasn't been polished because the, you know, typically we will polish the guitars and then route the pickups. But this has an exposed edge, like so that the edge where that has been routed is visible. So typically we'll do that before polishing. We'll spray another coat of lacquer so that it seals that exposed edge where lacquer meets raw wood, basically. It's a 90% complete guitar.
Right. So if the hole underneath, like if the part that's going underneath is bigger than the opening, how do you get the bottom part in?
Okay, good question. So we have a cavity that goes on, that's the pick guard covers. So it's just a port basically in the top of the guitar that we slip the electronics in through, and that's on most of like the the guitar, our model that's called the signature model, and our model that's called the ultralight.
Right.
We can put this port in the top and slip electronics through there. So it's a bit of a, it's a little finicky getting them in, but really not that bad. The other sketchy thing, I think you'll like this. the cavity that I had to slip the router bit through was 850 thou wide, but the router bit was 1¼ inch wide. So I couldn't actually put the router bit through the cavity.
Oh, okay. So what? How did you do that then?
I ground down the edges of the router bit. So it's a 2-flute router bit, but the whole thing is a big circle. So like a wood router bit.
Oh, so you like flattened it out.
Yeah.
And yeah. So you made a potentially unbalanced router bit and then spun it up to...
Now, I did to 10,000 RPM. I did make an effort to balance it.
And yeah.
By measuring how... like wide each flat was,
right.
So I think it was within like a couple tenths, a couple hundred tenths,
a couple of tenths of an inch. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's carpentry tolerances.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like an interesting day. Jeez,
this is an adventure.
Kind of surprised that Canadian Tire even had router bits, to be honest.
They do have their own brand of janky router bits.
Mastercrap. Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. Did the job. Actually, it came out real clean. I mean, this is inside the guitar.
Right.
You would never see this unless you took the pickup out of the guitar, which somebody might do. And when you look inside, it actually looks not bad.
Wait a second. So the router bit doesn't fit through like lengthwise. You have to like orient it a certain way to fit it in. So does that mean that you were like, how did you start the CNC movement inside?
Oh, no. I wasn't using a CNC.
Oh, you okay. This is on a router table.
Yeah. No, not a router table. I just used a hand router.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But that means had to like start it. Inside the guitar. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I was gonna say, like, if you'd somehow like orient the spindle, drop it into the thing, and start it up inside.
No, that would be terrifying. This was terrifying enough. Now, as unsafe as it sounds,
okay.
I did wear my safety glasses and earphones.
Oh, well, that's fine. I thought you were gonna say,
oh, that I did something more.
Yeah,
unsafe. I
did something more unsafe. It doesn't sound. I mean, that sounds like regular woodworking stuff.
I might have, but I'm just not telling.
Okay, that's for the best.
Yeah.
Oh God. Well, how's the rest of your week been?
I don't even know now.
It's just flown by.
Yeah. Well, no. That absorbed my entire brain capacity, and now I've forgotten everything. I'm taking tomorrow and Friday and the weekend off.
Ooh, a long weekend. So, huh?
Long weekend.
Nice.
Spend time with the fam.
How long has it been since you had a long weekend?
I took one like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And before then, I hadn't taken any time off in like 18 months.
Right.
And then before that, I had, I took like 2 weeks off for paternity leave.
Right. So are you guys like salaried employees? Do you have to keep track of your like vacation time and stuff?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. So you probably are owed a lot of vacation time.
Definitely. I should take myself up on that.
Yes, you should. I mean, my week's been kind of the same. Like I was on a big push there to get more blades out to DLC. Got them sent out to DLC coding last week. They're coming back tomorrow.
Nice. Okay, that's a pretty decent turnaround.
Yeah. They're pretty fast these days, actually.
Right.
I made a lot of progress on the kitchen knife last little while.
Oh, huge.
That's huge. Yeah, I made some really good progress with that. So I'm on my third production prototype right now.
Great. And how do you feel about it?
Each one is getting better and shinier. There's just lots of little things that are getting tweaked and changed. Like the overall shape of the knife isn't changing, but like the process that I'm using for machining the bevels is changing. So now I'm doing I actually have a whole, I actually have three separate CAD models that go into making the blade. So I have a CAD model that doesn't have the food release kind of channel on the blade.
Right.
Doesn't have the pinholes, doesn't have anything. It's just a big flat blade, you know? So I'm like machining that, roughing that with a high feed machining process, and then doing like a waterline semi-rough, and then doing a parallel semi-finish, you know, each one sneaking up on the finish size. And then I do a final finish pass.
So what's the runtime on that?
It's going to be long. It's going to be really long. I'm still, for some reason, so that this whole process is running on my my Fidal VMC 10, otherwise known as Millie.
The classic.
The classic. Yeah, and she's still having issues. I'm still having issues with the servos on that machine. Like, it runs 100%, like, totally reliable if I'm running under 70 inches a minute. But then, you know, as soon as I go above that, there's a chance that she'll throw a servo overload, like a motor overload error. And as I get faster and faster, the chances of that happening are higher and higher.
Gotcha.
So there's something... My other machine is, like, you know, mechanically and electrically identical, and it'll run 160 inches a minute, you know? So, weird. Yeah, I think something must be broken, but it's something really subtle. Like, you know, it's not bad enough to, like, make the machine not run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not with one specific axis. So,
yeah, you mentioned that, which is extra aggravating.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to dig into that. I mean, yeah, we'll see. I might even go to the point. I've actually got... So my VMC 15 has more modern servo drives in it. They are the same, theoretically, mm-hmm. but they're not exactly the same down to the level of the board. So what I might do is actually swap servo drives from one machine to the other and see if the problem follows.
Right. You know? That's a good idea.
Yeah, because that'll at least let me...
eliminate one thing at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you're hard milling, what speed are you running at?
Generally, it's not that crazy. Like, when I'm doing the high feed roughing on my hunting knife, I'm running at 100 inches a minute.
Okay.
I can't remember, actually. I think my finish toolpath is 100 inches a minute as well. It was previously slower because I thought that all machines were like... all of the Fidals were like Millie. I thought that, you know, if I went above 70 inches a minute, I'd start having problems. So I had to like unlearn that going.
So this has been a problem forever?
Yeah, it's been a problem ever since I bought the machine.
No way. And I thought this was a new thing.
No, and I just thought that was just how the machine was. You know, oh, it's an old machine. Well, I can deal with, you know, 60 inches a minute, 70 inches a minute. That's fine. And then I got the new one and I was like, I should try turning this up to 10 and see what happens. And it just kept going. You know, I kept turning it up and up and up, and it just kept going. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what the issue is, but something's the issue.
Huh. Interesting. It's funny that you've just been living with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know what? Like, for most of the stuff that I do, like, 60 inches a minute, you know, it's not far off what you actually want anyway. You know, so it hasn't really been that much of an inconvenience.
Yeah, true.
But now that I'm moving on to the kitchen knife, the cycle time for this, for just the blade, not including the handle, right now is going to be over 7 hours.
For one?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's like, well, I guess... 3.5 hours of machining per side for the blade. And then, you know, however long the handle scales take on top of that, probably another half an hour.
Hmm. And so you got to be running this thing overnight.
Well, so that's the problem, though. But I have my neighbor living next to me, so I can't run it overnight.
I know, that's what I'm thinking. Like, yeah. It's fucking annoying.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So, yeah, it's... But that being said, like, I'm really happy with how the knife has been coming along. Like, basically, I've been working on what's called an S grind, which is like a geometric feature, like a channel in the middle of the blade that's meant to help release food.
Right.
So yeah, just been really tweaking that. Like, you know, a standard S grind is basically just like a simple radius
like a single okay. radius cut into the blade. I'm actually doing like a compound radius now. So oh, cool. it's has sharper curvature at the transition in and out of the bevel. And just little tiny things that are like, it's funny how you get that confluence between design and process. You know, so that channel could, within reason, be any width. And then I realized if I make it a half an inch wide, then it's the exact same width as my mold polishing stones. And I can actually dress the tip of a mold polishing stone so I can make like a steel like mold and put diamond abrasive on that and then dress the tip of the mold polishing stone to be the exact same shape as the channel and then use that for my finishing.
Cool.
Yeah. So just little things like that are kind of coming together. Because without that stuff, you know, it, like life can be such a pain in the ass.
Right. You have to, that's an interesting point. Sometimes you have to give up certain like design features for practicality.
Yeah. Yeah. So they call that like design for manufacture. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in this case, I'm not really giving up a.
No, you're just, you're adapting.
Yeah.
That's probably the better term for it.
Yeah.
Rather than giving up.
Yeah. And all I had to do is, you know, like the channel was like 0.45 inches before, because that's what right. looked right to me. You know, there was no particular reason for it. And then I was like, hang on a sec, if I make that 0.5 and I just like kind of tweak the space around it to make it look right again, then I get this additional benefit, you know? So,
right.
Yeah, it's been good fun working on it.
Yeah, that's rad. I'm so excited to see that come to fruition.
Me too, buddy. It's been...
And I want to chop some tomatoes, as you might call
tomatoes. Yeah, it's been like five, six years in the making at this point.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah, it's a bit slow, even for me.
I don't know. I mean, 6 years, that's amazing how fast that goes.
Yeah, it is, right?
It is. Yeah, so speaking of speeding things up, mm-hmm. we were running through some programs on the Haas. Ooh. And just like getting obsessed a little bit with how fast we can push this thing.
Right.
And we were just like watching it run and I was like, can we fucking speed these rapids up? Like, so we just maxed out the rapids. That was one thing. It just shaved so much time off.
Mm.
And just like bumping up, like we don't have this on the gantry router, but like just being able to bump up the feed rate.
Yeah.
The feeds.
Yeah. Machine half of it at the program feed rate. And the other half at like 150%. See if your surface finish is okay. And
exactly. So we've been pushing that and to the limit of where the surface finish was not good.
Right.
And then we're like, okay, well, you know, a better tool might be able to actually give us the surface finish we want at this feed.
Yeah. Feed rate. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So it's making me think a lot more about tool geometry.
Mm.
And how we can, what tool geometry would work in order to speed up a process.
Right. Because you guys are probably most time consuming one is like the 3D contouring of the face of the guitar.
Yeah. How long would you think that would take?
Well, what tool are you using right now?
Half inch square.
Half inch square. Mm-hmm. I think 15 minutes.
Okay, it's 20, was 27 to start. We got it down to like 22.
Huh.
Now, so what we'd like to use instead of a single flute square end mill.
Oh, it's single flute. Okay.
Yeah. Is a three flute corner rad end mill.
Yes, I think corner rad is 100% the right way to go. Why three flute? And is it still going to be half inch?
Yes, half inch.
Okay.
So there's another thing that's keeping us from going up in size.
Mm.
The frame size, we don't want to step. So there's got to be a flat right at the end of the arch.
Right.
So by stepping up the tool size, you have to make that flat bigger. And then we're going to run into like our bushings. We could push the bushings out further.
But then like, you have to like, remake the fixtures and then...
Well, we have to remake the fixtures, but then also we've got now our wood length has to be longer.
Right.
And then the wood lumber comes in these, not standardized lengths, but the wood we have currently is divisible by like 18 inches. Right. So I was like, I can't make a body 19 inches long.
Yeah, it's funny how all of this stuff knocks on, isn't it? When you start it like totally making changes to your process.
So we're just trying to live with that and speed it up
right
as fast as we can and get, you know, like a signature model, which is machined on both sides. If we can get that down to 30 minutes, both sides, we'd be, you know, a lot faster.
Yeah.
Twice as fast as we're currently making them, for sure.
So my other question is, like, so right now you're using a single flute, and you said you're going to go to a three flute. Wow, that's hard to say. Corner rad. Why three?
Why not?
Why not four?
Well, we probably could do four for this surfacing operation. Mm. We still want to take a pretty good chip load. So
right.
You know, by increasing the number of flutes, you're reducing the size of the gullet of the tool.
Right.
And we want a nice big fluffy chip. We don't want to be making dust. So three seems like reasonable, and just in the tool manufacturers I've been looking at, like for we've been looking at aluminum router bits because we need something sharp.
Right.
I'm not seeing a lot more than three flutes for aluminum.
Three flutes is pretty standard for aluminum tooling.
Right. I mean, more flutes looks cooler. Mm-hmm. We also want like a slow helix typically.
Right.
It just shears better for wood. You have less. We're also using vacuum fixturing. We don't want a ton of pull.
Right.
So that's why. Yeah. And in a corner radius, like a nice big corner radius would be really good for us.
Yeah. No, totally.
So I've seen like 8 thou is kind of like a standard corner rod, but, helical. You can get them up to, you can get them from 30 thou up to like 1/8 inch.
Yep.
For a 1/2 inch tool.
Right.
And that would be pretty nice. I mean, essentially you kind of have like a little ball nose with that has a better ability to do surfacing, like you're actually, when you're center cutting, you're not just using the very fine tip of it. You've got a pretty flat, big flat surface.
Right.
For that router bit.
Well, you know me, I'm looking at the Maritool website right now as we speak. Yeah. And yeah, they have 3-flute 1/2 inch with a 90 thou corner radius.
Oh, where? I don't see that.
For $43.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, so if you just go cutting tools, end mills, corner radius, and then 3-fluters, stock item, buddy.
Tool, end mills.
It looks like the helix on these might be a bit faster than you'd want, though.
Right.
So one
is it 3-flute 4 aluminum?
Yeah. So other thing you could do, there's a company called AB Tool. I don't know if you've ever heard of
them. I was on their website yesterday.
Yeah. So like they'll make specials, like one-offs, you know. Right. So you could get like straight flute 3-fluters if that's what you want with a corner rad, you know. I don't know what the price would be like on that, but I've heard from other people that, you know, they consider their prices very reasonable.
Okay.
So yeah, if that's something that would be better because you're worried about lifting the part, then
I'm not incredibly worried about that, to be honest. Like, this tool we're talking about right now would be mostly for surfacing,
right?
And the helix isn't as important for that, like fast the helix is, right? Wouldn't be as critical, I don't think.
The other thing, I mean, so, you know, you've got this super, super fast machine. You know, one thing you could do is run roughing passes with a straight flute or even, you know, a down cut. And, you know, run those really aggressively because you don't care about surface finish. And then, you know, remove the bulk of material and then come back and do your contouring. And then because you're removing so much less material in each pass, you're not going to be worried about, it's not going to be creating as much upward force.
True.
You know? But I think
So what, you guys are running a 22-minute cycle with a single flute tool.
Yeah.
When you go to three flutes, like you, you know, assuming that you're not limited by feed rate, you should be able to go three times faster. Like,
right? Yeah.
So what feed rate is are you running at right now with the single flute?
Like 280 or 300.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Hustling. So yeah, you're going to be like pushing all the way up to, you know, 1,000 inches per minute.
That's, yeah, that's where it maxes out, I think.
Yep. Yeah. That's going to be very cool to watch. You're going to have to let me know when that's when that's happening.
I don't know. Yeah, we probably will try something like that. I was going to say, like, oh, we might not. Like, that sounds scary, but fuck it. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, you'll have to let me come and watch that. Maybe I need to film it for you guys or something.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so tool-wise, though, I did finally get in touch with the distributor for Helical.
Mm.
So
is that Triumph Tool in Canada?
Triumph Tool. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Talked to a super nice person there and she was really helpful and said, just send me your cart basically.
Right.
And so I did. And then, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's 3 days to get it shipped from Helical directly to them and then overnight to us. So right. Still probably not as fast as ordering from Maritool.
Right. Well, if they have what you need, you should order from Maritool. Just saying. You know, yeah,
I will. You know, I'm gonna order. Yeah. I'm gonna order all my tool holders from them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would love if I could order the actual tools from them.
Yeah, 100%.
And mills.
So I had a visit from a mutual acquaintance of ours this morning at the shop. Mm-hmm. Had our friendly neighborhood Haas rep. Came in.
Oh, Fabrizio. Yeah. He was going to be in the neighborhood. He called me too.
Yeah. So, he came in and
he just... Did he just stop by?
No, he set it up with me in advance. He just wanted to come in.
He's a gentleman.
He is, yeah, super nice dude. But he just wanted to come and have a look around the shop and, you know, as you said, how can we get into a new house today? but no, he's super nice. Didn't give any like high pressure sales tactics or anything. Just had a poke around.
Yeah.
And he said he's actually going to have some of their applications guys, like, I'm going to send them some videos and photos of my surface finish and that kind of stuff, because, you know, like I'm the surface finish that I'm demanding that I would want out of a new machine is like pretty intense, you know,
right. Like if you're going to spend the money, it better be good.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I talk about, so like I'm hard milling, you know, like sky's the limit for the amount of, like the quality of the surface finish that I can produce, because there's no smearing or anything in that surface. Mm-hmm. So like with really good tools and a really good machine, like you can absolutely produce like perfect, perfect mirror finishes, which is
cool.
Insane. But the machines that'll do that. So like a Makino F5, for instance, mm-hmm. would do that. But that's like, I believe there's something in the region of like $300,000 to $400,000 US.
Right.
For one machine. And those things are huge. I watched a video today of a walk around of one. And, you know, so from the front, it looks like a normal VMC. But then it's like, you know, 1.5 times as deep as
really?
A normal. It's massive. The casting in the back is just massive.
I guess that's what makes it so rigid.
Yeah. And then it has an outboard chiller that, like, it runs coolant through all of its castings to keep right. the whole thing at the same temperature all the time.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's just crazy, crazy machines, you know. So if I was to buy a machine like that, like I know I could produce mirrors all day.
Okay, because that was going to be my question: is a Haas good enough?
And that's the thing. Like I don't know. You know, I even said to the Haas rep Fabrizio, I opened up the website and went to the page for the VM series mills, which is their like mold making mills, mm-hmm. and they have an image on the website of a male mold. That's part of like a video game controller, and the surface finish isn't that great, you know. So I don't know whether it's kind of a matte finish, you know. So I don't know whether they're showing like a roughing pass or are they showing it on soft steel. That looks to me like a finish that you would get on a soft, like annealed steel.
Could it have been intentional, that finish?
Maybe,
because if you're talking about mold making, maybe they wanted.
Maybe they wanted a particular
finish. The part to come outside.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, so if you, I can't remember where I saw this, but Makino do a demo where they take, you know, a piece of hardened steel
and they machine this like sculpture of a dolphin into it. And every, like straight off the machine, every surface is a mirror. Like all of the curves, everything.
Wow.
It like, you know, and I've never seen a demo like that run on a Haas. I have no idea right. what the upper limit is for surface finish on one of their mold making machines, you know? So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I would really like to get an answer to that question.
Is there somewhere like in between a Makino and a Haas that would be, if you're going to put in 100,000, 105,000 US dollars
mm-hmm.
for a VM2 or something, could you, you know, put in a little more and get a, like what for 150, can you get a DMG?
Yeah, I wouldn't. So I used to be really, you know, at half mast for DMGs.
Stoked on DMGs.
Oh, so stoked on DMGs because they look sexy. You know, they really do. Like they've got that spaceship.
The new
design.
Ones are really, yeah. Like the older ones look like a normal VMC, but
yeah.
Yeah.
And part of the issue is that, you know, as I was talking to more people about them and looking back at their history, it seems like every couple of years, they're basically doing like a ground up redesign of their machines. So when you look at like the Jura Vertical series was, I think that was more like Mori before DMG and Mori kind of became one thing, you know. The Jura Vertical series had an amazing reputation. They were supposed to be really, really good, especially for the money. Like they were really nice. And then DMG Mori like redesigned that and it was like a ground up redesign and they sucked. And then they've right. redesigned them since then again, you know. So one of the issues
I did hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of the issues that I have when thinking about like a DMG is that, you know, what's the continuity of parts going to be like? You know, all that kind of stuff is just an issue. So I,
but that they're a huge company and there's got to be a mat like every year that how many of those things are they pumping out? They have to have a huge like
undoubtedly they have spare parts, but you know,
yeah.
what do they want for them? Right? Like
good question.
You know, like I know a Fidal or a Haas, you get spare parts and they're, you know, not expensive.
Well, and that's like buying a Honda Civic. If you're going to buy a Ferrari, everything's going to be expensive.
Yes. Yeah. And that is one of the issues, you know, like on the more expensive, fancier machines, you know, so one of the guys on Practical Machinist often tells this story. He's like, oh, they got a, I think it was a Mazak, you know, a brand new machine, really, really nice, like a mold making machine. And they were super in love with it. And then they had a crash and they hosed the spindle and the new spindle was like 25K.
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that experience, he was like, well, I guess I'll stick with Fidals. You know, like, I don't know if that's the right answer, but it is a little terrifying to think of, like, crashing a machine and then having a repair bill that's, like, you know, a quarter yeah. of the cost of a new machine.
What does it cost to replace a Haas spindle?
About 4K.
4K, okay. Yeah,
they're not expensive. I think it depends wow. on the model, but I've looked at a couple of, like, VF spindles. So one of the really nice things is you can go to diy.haascnc.com and right. type in the serial number of your machine and it'll show you all of the parts that you can buy for your machine. All of the replacement parts and their prices. Just, you don't have to call anyone. You don't have to get quotes. It's just all there.
That's sick.
Yeah.
I kind of want to look up and see how much it's going to cost me to replace my 15K spindle if I ever crash.
Yeah, you should totally have a look, you know, like it's just interesting to know. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, for me, in my mind, the middle ground between, like, a Haas VM and a Makino F5 is probably the Okumo Genos M560V.
Cool.
So that's a 40x20 VMC, but it's a, I don't know what they call it, like a dual column or a bridge style.
Right. Yeah. So the spindle, the X, or sorry, the... Yeah, is it the X?
Yeah.
Moves, the spindle moves?
Yeah, so the spindle moves left and right and up and down, and then the table moves in and out on Y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So those are like really, really rigid machines.
Right, because it's not like a C style.
Yeah, C-frame. So I think, from memory, I think that machine weighs something like 23,000 pounds.
Whoa.
Yeah.
For a 40x20?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I can find the website while we're talking. Yeah. And
they have, so you can buy the basic machine and it's supposed to be very good, but then they have an add-on called Super Nerbs, which rather than taking G-code, it actually takes like data straight from your CAM software, from your CAD software rather, so that it can more accurately recreate flowing curved surfaces. And that is like a $15,000 add-on.
Wow.
But just having the option to do that means that they, you know, very much have mold making in their mind when they're doing that. Because again, if you look on the Haas website and you look at the VM page, they have that, you know, controller, video game controller demo. And if you look at a couple of the like curved kind of bulge features that are in the middle of that image, you can actually see facets on those features. You know, so that's evidence of, you know, the G-code was output with straight lines rather than with smoothing, or the smoothing tolerance for those curves isn't quite right. And that's exactly the kind of thing that SuperNurbs is like designed to get rid of.
Right, which would be great for you.
100%. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where like, I don't know if I can really justify it. You know, like right now I fix the problem by doing more hand finishing.
Right. Which is expensive, and if you think about it.
Oh yeah, totally. But, you know, I don't have the demand to make that not feasible.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah. Your labor doesn't come with a
high enough cost. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't come, you don't have to go to a bank to get a loan for your labor.
Right. So I just found
those Genos aren't bad price though.
No, they're not. It's I think they're like 130,
125 US.
Yeah.
I'm guessing US.
Yeah. And so I found the spec sheet.
Who knows that, what that comes with.
So that machine is 16,500 pounds, not 23, by the way, just as a correction.
Still for, I guess, like a VF3, which is for, no, VF4 is 40 by 20?
VF3,
40 by 20. Those things are like 12,000 pounds, I think.
Yeah. So that machine comes standard with a dual arm style 32 pocket tool changer. Wow. Cat 40 dual contact spindle. 15,000 RPM.
Great. Wow.
I believe that they'll run up to, wait, so it's 1500 inches a minute rapids, and the max feed rate on each axis is 1200 inches a minute. And it will do that with, the max workpiece weight is 2000 pounds.
Holy shit, this thing rules.
Yeah, they are an absolute beast. I
should get one of these.
I've had my eye on one for a long, long time. I think that, you know, short of buying a Makino, the Okuma is like very much the machine that I would buy. And yeah. I have had kind of, you know, followed threads with people that have bought them on Practical Machinist, and I haven't heard anyone being unhappy with them, you know.
It looks awesome. It kind of looks like an old Dura vertical.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Very similar style. Apparently, so I just remembered, apparently they do leak around the doors. Like if you're running high pressure coolant, you can get them to leak onto the floor from the from the door at the front. That's like one of the only complaints that I've heard. It seems annoying. Like a really stupid thing on a machine that's otherwise so well dialed in.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that apparently that machine under the hood has been the same for like 10 or 15 years.
Right.
So like parts are well available for it. And it's actually, so they have, Okuma have a higher spec machine called the MB56, I think. And those are actually the same iron. Like the machine is the same. It's just that the MB56 is more, it's like built to order rather than the M560V is pre-built with a set of options, and then you can add to that if you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
The M560V. Okay, M560V. I was looking at the M460. So the
M560V is slightly bigger.
133.
Yes.
Yeah.
$133,000 US, right? The base price.
But think about it. I mean, what is a VM3 is going to be like? I get to, depends on the options. Like, I don't know if this comes. Like that, yeah. That's what it would start at, but it's not going to come with 15K spindle.
Right.
Or 32. It's going to come with the umbrella style tool changer, maybe at that.
No, the VM.
No, the VM comes with the
VM machines start. They come with the dual arm style.
Right.
Still,
I mean, if you could spec out a VM3 to be close to this price, but it would come with a tool probe.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I don't know, whatever other option. Like does this have a chip auger?
I don't know. I would imagine it's an extra.
Right. So you might have to spend 150K to make this machine more practical.
Right. But, you know, as you said, like you were asking about a middle ground between like the super expensive machine and a Haas. And for me, I think that'd be the sweet spot. You know, if someone's looking for like a beast of a machine to put in their small shop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Okuma is.
I like it.
Yeah. And I think there's a video on YouTube where a guy is running a Haas VM. And then I think it's one of these machines in comparison. And he tries to take a really big hogging cut on the Haas. And it's like, and you just, you know, spindle overload, the machine faults out. Mm-hmm. And then he takes the same cut on the other machine. And it's just, you know, it's throwing huge chips, just goes straight through this block of like mold steel, you know.
Right.
I'll have to see if I can find the video and put it in the show notes.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah,
the website is too funny though.
The Okuma website?
Sorry. Yeah.
What's wrong with it?
Well, they have one photo of the machine.
Yeah.
And they've got these little plus symbols all over it, and you'd think that would maybe pull up a photo.
Nope.
But nope. It's currently just this plus symbol is blocking my view of the spindle.
Right.
Nose. And I want to see how big it is. Right. How burly is the spindle?
They have some videos underneath. Maybe I'll put some of those like links in the show notes as well.
Oh yeah, you're right. They do. Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
because that's one thing. When you look at a Haas, the spindle nose is like not that big. It's kind of small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean so bigger bearings are more rigid, but bigger bearings are more expensive, mm-hmm. and bigger bearings with high RPM ratings are, you know, the cost just goes up astronomically. Right. The only thing that I worry about with a machine like this, so that 15K spindle that's in the Okuma, I'm not sure whether that has ceramic bearings or steel bearings. Right. And I have heard, I can't speak to this directly, but I've heard that spindles with ceramic bearings in them are much less tolerant of being crashed.
Right, a little more delicate.
Yeah.
I don't know what mine has, but it's got a 15K spindle.
Right. Have you crashed it yet?
I haven't crashed it.
That's good.
Why do you keep thinking we're going to crash it?
don't crash it, please. I'm knocking on some wood for you. Yeah, and I mean, I'm trying to think of the crashes I've had. I've only really had one that could have toasted spindle. And I forget exactly what happened. I misprogrammed an offset. And I drove the spindle nose downward straight into a 1-inch piece of steel, cold rolled steel, which was, for better or worse, hanging off the side of the vise. So it actually like ripped the piece of steel out of the vise. It kind of pivoted in the jaws,
okay,
and pushed it down. Yeah. But honestly, like the Fidal doesn't really have the like servo power to like really smash the spindle. Like the servos, right, will fault out before, you know, and you're only going 100 inches a minute, so there's not that much mass, you know. Whereas something like the Okuma, you know, 1600 inches a minute rapids directly into a vise, like I'm sure that would toast a spindle.
That would be good to know. The Haas has this what's it called? Safe run,
mm-hmm,
mode. So you can run it in safe run. It slows the rapids down. So if you are, I imagine it. This also works if you're like in the cut, but if it's taking too high a load,
right,
then it'll stop itself. Something like
that. I did
that.
Look into that a little while ago, and I believe it's only active in G0, which is rapid.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, I think when you're in the cuts, when you're running a G1 or a G3 or whatever, it is not active at that point, and so you could technically crash it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the answer is just don't crash your machine.
Well, you're rapiding at 600 inches per minute or 1,000 inches per minute.
Right.
That's if you're going to crash, you're not really going to be doing that in the cut necessarily.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Going that fast. So.
Oh, it's okay. It's both fun and saddening to look at machines like this because I would love one, obviously, yeah. You know.
You'll get one.
Yeah.
I'm confident you will. No, you will for sure. I mean, it's not even that crazy. It's a big price tag, but
yeah,
you could, this could be, I don't think it would be transformative to your business. I think what you're doing right now is smart, but if you're, when you want to make that next step up in production,
yeah,
you could add this to your, you know, your, the machines you already have.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, one thing,
keep running the Fidals.
I think that
just go to town with this.
I think that when this comes into play, probably what I would want to do is get something like the Genos and then a wire EDM and move all of my parts, all of my, you know, knives over to the window style machining where they're held into the blank and then I'm machining in on either side. Mm-hmm. You know, and have like two kitchen knives, two Resolutes, two folding knives all on the table at the same time and do like, you know, mirror finishes on everything. 24-hour cycle time, just keep the machine running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then, you know, wire EDM the parts out of the steel blanks and then keep the Fidals for running composites, like for running hand materials.
Totally.
And that would be crazy. Like I think at that point I would be getting blades, like parts straight out of the machines that could go, like I could ship them straight to a customer without touching them at all.
Right. That's what you want. You put a fucking parts loader right in front of this.
There you go. Yeah, pallet changer or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really though. I mean, you totally could.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that that kind of automation becomes less important when you end up with like a 24-hour cycle time or a 12-hour cycle time.
Sure, yeah.
You know, because then
that's true.
Like I only have to go to the you know, I have to be in front of the machine once a day to change parts. Like that's not a big deal.
Right.
I'm okay with that.
It's like, oh, I'm going to do a weekend run for 2 days straight. And then you only have 32 tool holders in this machine.
Mm-hmm.
You have a broken tool or a tool runs it's through its life.
Right.
And the machine alarms out because of that. And now it's just sitting there.
Yeah. And I think you'd have to work really hard to dial all that stuff in, you know, like
maybe
you're doing tool changes every two cycles or something, you know, that's not outlandish for the kind of work that I do. Or maybe even once a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, tool change every cycle as well. Like, putting in new tools every cycle.
Right. I think that's a good segue to customer question.
Sure.
I don't think it was a question, but they just sent a but did I say customer?
Listener, I think you mean.
I mean, you guys could buy some of our stuff and then you'd be customers.
Mm-hmm.
Listener sent us a video of an automatic tool changing system that this person built.
Yes.
On their CNC. Have you watched this video?
I have, yeah. So this was sent to me by Elson Knives on Instagram. And Eric at Elson Knives is actually the guy that bought my hard inch CNC lathe.
Cool.
Yeah. So he got a really nice machine there. I wish I'd had space to keep that. But yeah, so he sent us a video, as you said, of this tool changing system that's been retrofitted onto a CNC router. And it's using ER collets. And it has this
hilarious.
It has this system for like automatically torquing, like tightening and loosening the ER collets. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I've never even thought about that. When you think of like having redundancies,
mm-hmm.
like extra tools, you think about having a second tool holder with that tool in it.
Right.
Never thought of a system. Like, this is wild. It makes sense for what this person's doing because it's just a they've got a gantry router. It's small. And I imagine, like, they don't show them cutting anything, but it looks like they probably just use one tool for everything.
Right.
Like one router bit. So it's like a small, it's like an eighth inch shank with, I don't know, whatever. It's like a, maybe it's an eighth inch tool diameter.
Well, you mean they use one tool shank size, right? For everything.
Tool shank size. Yes, true. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, that's a good point. Is it taking, is it in place of a tool changer itself?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's so, he has a like an ER collet spindle, you know, with no tool holder or anything. It's integral ER collets. Mm-hmm. And then he has a 1/8 ER collet in there, and all of his tools have 1/8 shanks, you know, so he's got like 10 tools, 12 tools or something. And so he's actually got this system on the machine that's loosening the ER collet, then coming over to the tool magazine, pulling the little tool out, and then moving over to another tool with the same 1/8 shank and dropping down onto it, and then going back over and tightening the collet up again. It's crazy.
Right. I zipped through the video quickly before we started this, but that's hilarious. That's even better. He's using it as a tool changing system.
Yeah.
Which it says in your show notes. I thought he was just like, I thought he would just have the same, he had the same tool.
Oh.
He was using it when that tool was worn or broke.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting you say that because the tools that he's using are all 1/8 shank tools, and then they have a little plastic kind of collar.
Tool, yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure that you've seen tools like that.
We have tools like that. Yeah.
There you go. So those tools are actually from a specific industry. They're from the printed circuit board manufacturing industry. And the reason they put those collars on there is because they actually use those to set the Z height, like the Z length of the tools. If you were to buy, you know, 10 of the same cutting bit, so like, you know, a 1/64 end mill with a 1/8 shank, every single one of those between the back face of the plastic collar and the tip of the tool will have the exact same length to within a couple of thousandths of an inch.
Yeah, no, they, and we do buy them like that. We buy them these packs
of
10, I think, and they are reasonably accurate. Like the tool length doesn't change much between them,
and
which is sweet.
Yeah, and the reason they do that is because the CNC routers that they use for machining circuit boards go through end mills like crazy because they're little tiny tools and they're machining G10, which is the same stuff I use for my knife handles. Yeah, it's very, very abrasive. So these machines actually automatically throw out tools and put in new tools. So they, like, you know, they know that they can use each cutting tool for, you know, 30 minutes of routing. And then after that, it literally chucks it in a little bin, grabs a new tool. And because it already has that collar, it actually pushes it into the spindle up to that collar, and that's your Z length.
And they accept that tolerance range,
yeah,
and they don't need to touch it off.
Yeah, it's good enough. Yeah.
Genius.
And the spindles that they use in that industry actually don't have tool holders. They actually just have like a direct clamping system that's designed specifically just to accept those 1/8 shank tools.
Like kind of like a lathe.
Yeah, exactly. Like you know, like a 5C collet on a lathe or something, except much smaller.
That's sick.
Yeah. So I've thought before about, you know, some system for using ER collets exactly like this guy is doing to change tools. One thing that I thought about in the past was rather than having like a VFD driven, a variable frequency drive driven spindle, like you would normally have a servo driven spindle. And then you could actually use the servo drive for the spindle to tighten and loosen the ER collet nut. Like, you,
how would that work?
If you dropped the ER collet nut into like a stationary wrench that's mounted to the table, then you could slowly turn it. Slowly turn the spindle using the servo to tighten it up.
Isn't that what this guy did?
He actually has a second axis. So he has like a wrench that comes up around the ER collet and like holds the spindle stationary, torquing. And then it turns the bottom. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I wasn't sure from watching the video if the spindle was the what was.
Yeah, the spindle staying stationary. It's a crazy system. It's a really, really clever idea. It's really interesting how it's like a bastardization of kind of multiple ideas from other industries, you know?
I liked how DIY it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like lots of 3D printed parts and all sorts of cool stuff in there. Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes because it is absolutely worth watching. It's very, very cool.
Totally.
So we don't have much space news this week, unfortunately. There hasn't been much going on.
Oh, did sad. I skip space and go straight to
You did, but that's fine. We can go back.
I had that dope segue.
You did. It was beautiful. I appreciate you doing segues now. You're becoming a pro.
Yeah.
So SpaceX is getting set up to do the first static firing of their Super Heavy booster, which is exciting. So there's going to be That's going to be the most powerful rocket ever fired when it starts up. It's like 29 Raptor engines on one rocket, which is crazy.
So it go fast.
It go fast. It go very fast.
Nice.
So yes, nothing really exciting to tell you about apart from that. So I'm not exactly sure when that's going to be happening, but hopefully within the next week or two. So
okay, dumb question, mm-hmm. but. All those engines, will it get into space faster?
No, it's just meant to lift okay. more stuff into space.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
It's what do you call question. That?
It's like its payload capacity.
Right.
Yeah.
So is that okay. If they had just less payload though, would it go faster?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Like if you launched an empty one, I imagine it would get to space real fast.
Nice, but it would like suck the skin off the astronauts' faces.
Yes, I don't know if you'd want to ride that up.
Cool. Well, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to watching that. And so
come on, Richard Branson. No space news? Didn't you watch this thing where the Virgin guy went to the edge of space?
Oh, tell me about it, Nick. I didn't watch it.
I don't know anything about it. Dude, this guy just got harassed by a bunch of people for not actually going into space.
his amazing thing wasn't quite good enough.
I guess so. You didn't? Come on, you must have seen.
No, I didn't.
Seen this?
I have. For honestly, real? I've been very busy the last week, and I didn't catch it.
Yeah, Richard Branson, the eccentric billionaire, sent himself and some other people to the edge of space and like. Rocket that looks like a plane or something. That's my take on it.
Love it. Nick's giving us the space news. All right, I'll have to watch that. I'll have to search that up and we can talk about it next week. I'd heard that they were going to do it, but I didn't know that they'd already done it.
Yeah,
very cool.
Get with the times.
Oh, I'm sorry everybody, I'm letting you down here.
Okay, so what else? What were you going
to
say?
I was going to say that, speaking of things to watch, I found a new YouTube channel that I think everybody that's listening to this podcast will love, including you, Nick. It is called Just Machining. It's a channel by a German guy who runs a machine shop in Bavaria. It's called Bavaria CNC. And he has a beautiful machine. He has a Hermley C400 5-axis milling machine. And
those are cool.
This whole channel is just him running parts. Like it's just, you know, up close machining of parts. No voiceover, no music, no bullshit. Just like watching parts get run on a really beautiful machine.
That's so German.
It's beautiful. I
just love it. Right to the business.
I love it. I wish, honestly, like every machine tool manufacturer should take a page out of this guy's book. You know, like I cannot count the number of times I see like a really expensive machine and they're doing a demo of it and there's fucking music instead of being able to hear the machine cut, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Because like...
That's so important.
Yeah. I want to hear the machine cut. Like it may sound like a horrible chirpy crap, you know? Like I want to hear the burt burt when it's cutting, you know?
So yeah, everyone should go check out that channel. I really like it. You'll see my comments on all these videos.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was like,
these are the mean comments?
Yeah, exactly. I'm being super mean to him. No, I mean, I just said on the latest one, I was like, I love that I'm, you know, running CNC machines and like programming machines like at least 50 hours a week. And yet here I am for fun, still watching this guy run his machines.
It's true. That's when you know you like something.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay. Maybe this is what you need, a Hermley.
Oh, they are definitely.
Do you have $1 million?
I do not. And you really are talking. Maybe. Yeah, so
$500,000?
I don't want to put too many dots together because people will be able to work out who I'm talking about. But I know of other machines in a kind of similar class, and you are straight up talking about $1 million for that kind of machine. Yeah, it's insane. I definitely can't stomach spending that much money on a machine that I'm then invariably going to crash as I'm learning 5 axis machine.
Yeah. 5-axis is so cool.
It is, yes. Speaking of cool, I am cool. Did you know that?
This is news to me.
Yeah, I know. It's not actually true, which is why it's news. But I had a very fun week the last week. Part of the reason I've been so busy is I actually did 2 interviews on other podcasts.
What?
Yeah, so I did an interview with Jeff Fader on the Full Blast podcast, which is... he talks to a lot of like artists and that kind of stuff. And it's less about like how to do this stuff and more like why and how you got into it. So that was a lot of fun. Jeff's a great guy. Cool. I've known him for quite a while. And the other one was the Within Tolerance podcast, which is a machining podcast where he just does interviews with machinists. And that's run by Dylan from Protium Machining. And that was also great fun. So
cool.
If you, Nick, or if listeners are looking for something else to listen to during the day, then Full Blast podcast and Within Tolerance podcast. Those will be out soon.
Excellent.
Yeah. If you haven't heard enough of my annoying voice, then there's more places for you to hear my annoying voice.
Yeah. Can we auto-tune you?
Nice. You're welcome to auto-tune me. You'll just have to take over the editing of this podcast.
Nah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Nick's just like that. Nick's out.
Doesn't take much to deter me.
Yeah, seriously. Speaking of deterrence, I want you to leave right now. I think we are done this show.
Okay. Well, why waste any more time?
Goodbye. Goodbye, sir. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you again next week.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.